We're talking with and about film critics today. And for years, the most famous and trusted movie critic in America was Roger Ebert. His thumbs up or thumbs down convinced a lot of us to see or to skip a movie. A few years before his death, Roger Ebert sat down with Steve Paulson and reflected on his legendary and prolific career.
I've written reviews that are fairly serious, reviews that are fairly frivolous, and the critics that I like, I read them most of all as essayists, without really wanting to know if I should see the movie or not, because in most cases I have seen the movie, so I don't need to know the answer to that question.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel like you got it wrong? You know, if you see the movie a year later, or you know, after you hear what other people have said about it, you realize you blew it?
That's the most common question that a movie critic gets after how many movies do you see in a week. Have you ever changed your mind on a movie? And I usually answer that question by saying, would that be wrong to do that? Or should one, having been a movie critic for 39 years, never have changed his mind ever? Obviously, over a period of time, the experiences in your life and the experiences you have at the movies allow you to bring something to a movie, let's say 20 years later or 10 years later, that you wouldn't bring or couldn't bring at the time you saw it in the first place. And so I'm sure that my opinions have broadened or deepened. So, yeah, one hopes to be able to grow and learn, sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would think one of the obvious occupational hazards of being a movie critic is you just have to see a lot of junk. You have to wade through a lot of mediocre movies. Does it ever get you down?
No, because I enjoy writing reviews of bad movies. Look at it this way. If you had to see a bad movie, it would be 2 hours of your life that you would resent because you had lost them and wasted them. I'm paid to be there. I got in free. And I get to write a review about it, in which I get my revenge. As I was watching Deuce Bigalow, European Gigolo, I was not suffering, because with every additional awful moment that went past, I was busily taking notes for my review.
So the worse it is, the more license you have to rip it apart.
In a sense, yeah. Some movies, I think a crime that's worse than badness is boring. In print, I review most everything that I can. I do about 280 movie reviews a year.
280 movie reviews a year.
Yeah.
It's almost one every day.
Well, I have 8 coming out next Friday. And I like to write a lot of movie reviews because I enjoy writing.
You must be very fast.
Well, you know, I'm fast, but I'm not that fast. It takes some time.
How long do you figure a typical review takes you to write?
Some reviews take typing speed. Others can take...
Typing speed?
Yeah. I've written reviews at typing speed. I've also written reviews that took... couple of hours and then let them rest on the hard drive and go back at them tomorrow and look at them again. And
you're saying you can write some reviews that would 5 minutes or something like that?
Oh, no, typing speed would still be longer than 5 minutes, I'm sure.
Okay. Do you have any guilty pleasures about particular kinds of movies? I mean, movies that probably in some objective sense are not that great, but you just really like them.
You know, when I saw Basic Instinct 2 with Sharon Stone, I knew that it was a bad movie, and it is a bad movie. But I found myself extremely conflicted about it because it was not boring and it was often awful in extremely engaging ways. I think I said that the role could not be played well, but nobody could play it badly better than Sharon Stone. And I gave it 1.5 stars, and I kind of had a funny little footnote saying that I gave it 1.5 stars sort of like a cold shower to keep myself from giving it 4 stars. Well, in a review like that, what I'm trying to tell the reader is, look, it's bad. We all know it's bad. But of the bad movies that are out there, this one is probably going to entertain you more than most of the others. There's a certain gratitude you have for some kinds of movies that are awful in grandiose or ambitious ways instead of just simply awful through stupidity and lack of any attempt to do anything.
Mm-hmm. When I originally went to see Dumb and Dumber, the person I went to see it with, she was laughing throughout much of the movie, and then when it ended, she said, "That was a really stupid movie."
Yeah, you know,
and I sort of said, "How can you say it's bad if you were laughing during it?"
I think I gave it a negative review, something like 2.5 stars or 2 stars, and yet the scene where the blind boy realizes that his parakeet's head has been scotch taped onto the body, I'm still laughing now when I think about it, and maybe I should have given that movie a favorable review. another movie, There's Something About Mary. Mm-hmm. That movie has six of the biggest laughs I've ever had in a theater.
With the dogs.
And they are separated by just about nothing.
Yeah.
It's just dead space, enormous laugh. Dead space, enormous laugh. Now, a perfect comedy like the original Mel Brooks producers, the whole movie is great. And you can't say that about There's Something About Mary. But then on the other hand, when you're laughing, you are really, really laughing. And that's, you know, humor cannot be faked.
So as a critic, what do you say about a movie?
Now, I gave it a favorable review while saying that, you know, it's pretty dead in between the laughs. But maybe the dead spaces are just building up to the next laugh in a way, although they're not really very well handled. But the laughs are well handled. You know, it's rare enough to find a perfect movie.
Have there been any perfect movies?
Yeah, there have been some perfect movies. McCabe and Mrs. Miller is a perfect movie by Robert Altman. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect movie. There is nothing wrong with it. Everything is right about it. Every shot, every moment, everything in that movie. It's just a wonderful film. And I can think of some others. O Hazard Balthazar by Bresson, the story of a donkey, is a perfect film. 2001 is a perfect film.
Now, when you look back over the history of film criticism, who are the critics who stand out to you?
Well, the critic that was most important to me was Dwight MacDonald, who worked for Esquire in the 50s when I was in high school. And by reading his column, I became aware of what film criticism could be, or indeed that it existed. And it changed the way I looked at movies. Hmm. I think that like most people in downstate Illinois, and when I was 14 or 15, I just went to the movie and looked at it and left. And it was MacDonald's example that led me to the art theater in town to begin to see Fellini and Bergman and the British directors.
Hmm. So what about Dwight MacDonald? What about his criticism?
Important to me what he said. It was important to me that he said it and how he said it. I liked his style. I liked the way he wrote. I liked his scorn. But it was through the example of MacDonald and other people who were writing in those kinds of magazines at that time, Norman Mailer, Gore Vidal, these people inspired me or taught me or pointed me toward first-person personal essays.
Right. Now, I think some people would say that there have been a few critics who actually changed the way we thought about movies. I mean, sort of who elevated the respect for certain kinds of movies that were just dismissed before.
Well, what happened in the 1960s was that film criticism as a profession and film critics as people became visible in popular culture for the first time. There's been some backsliding since then. Today, most of the coverage of movies in the mass media is simply promotional and celebrity-driven. Nothing amuses me more than these infotainment shows. We've got the first look at the trailer for The Matrix, you know. And then they interview the stars, and they visit the set. But they never tell you what they think about the movie. They will tell you everything about the premiere and what people wore and who was there and how much the movie cost.
They don't want to bite the hand that
feeds
them.
But they will not say if they liked it or not, because what they are doing essentially is using their access to this material to put their shows together.
Is this a good time to be a movie critic right now?
Well, it's a good time every time you see a good movie. In my career, I've had a lot of moments when you go into a theater expecting nothing and come out having seen a great film. Oddly enough, Gene Siskel and I had just come back from vacation and walked in on Monday morning to a 10 o'clock movie called Fargo that we, neither one of us, knew anything about. And we didn't even know it was directed by the Coen brothers, and their credit isn't until the end, although you might have guessed that it was. And when you stumble upon a film like this from out of left field, it's such a great experience. When I saw Monster, I expected nothing. And I had no idea that was Charlize Theron, and I never did until the final credits. And what a great movie that was. A Monster's Ball, too, you know, which I didn't expect was going to be anywhere near that good. And I was blown away by that. Million Dollar Baby. Clint Eastwood made that movie with no advance publicity, no interviews on the set, no infotainment profiles, nothing. I received a call. They're going to screen Clint Eastwood's new film. It's called Million Dollar Baby. It's going to be at 10 o'clock on Monday. And I walked into it, and I walked out, and I knew that I had seen that year's Oscar winner. But I had no idea what to expect. I did not know it was a boxing movie.
I'm amazed that that's, I guess I just, I would have assumed that, that someone in your position would kind of know all the buzz.
No,
about
I try
movies.
To avoid the buzz. You know, you can go online and there are sites where you can actually read early drafts of the screenplay and hear all about fights on the set and whether the director's cut is going to make it through and what Harvey is doing, you know, to some poor director. And I'm not interested in that. I want to go in, sit down, and look at the movie. Afterwards, I might want to find out more about it, sure.
Roger Ebert died in April 2013. That was an excerpt from a longer conversation he had with Steve, and you can hear the full thing on our website at ttbook.org.